Welcome to the sermon podcast of South Hills Church in Costa Mesa. My name is Chris Kretzu, and I'm the campus pastor here. Thank you for carving out the time to listen to this today. I hope that you will be encouraged and challenged, and ultimately that you'll have a deeper sense of God's love for you. I'll be back after the message is over, but until then, I hope that you enjoy this episode. My name's Chris. Thank you guys for being here. We are in week two of a series called The Opposite of Spoiled. It's based off of a book, which has to do, it's actually a book for parents and raising kids that are grateful and generous. It's not a Christian book, but it's a great book, super practical, and so practical that we thought, you know what? I know a couple grown-ups that could also benefit from this. So we are using a lot of content from the book as well as some other resources. Obviously, we're overlaying this with the scripture, what we believe God is calling us to do with our finances. And it's just a really practical thing to talk about. This is not a sermon on tithing. This is not a sermon about how you should give the church your money. This is a sermon on and a series on really about how to find health overall in our finances. We talk about every aspect of our lives at South Hills Church. Even the uncomfortable ones. You know, everybody's favorite messages are when they show up with a friend to church and they're talking about money or sex. And so, money is today. But it's an important thing to talk about. And like I said, you know, we talk about all kinds of things. We do series on family and relationships. We do series on addiction. We do series on mental health. We do series... They're just going to scream every time I talk? Is that how this works? I feel like I stopped and I was like, no, they're having a great time in there. They're having a party today because the kids in the elementary class, A, they always have a party, but B, they have little competitions. They get to bring like their Bible or they have their memory verses. And so they're having a party in there today. So kudos to them. If you guys would bring your Bibles, we could have a pizza party also. Anywho, we are in this series, and I don't know if you guys have ever been in this place where maybe you have a tendency, kind of like I do, to get really excited, maybe hyper-focused on a thing or an idea. A purchase is the way it shows up for me, and I'm really very adept at convincing myself that this purchase is going to change my life. I had a few things in mind, and I asked my wife, I said, hey, do you remember anything that I've ever bought that I ended up not really using? And she had an embarrassingly long list of those things. But the first one was actually right after we got married. It was almost 16 years. We've been married, it'll be 16 years in May. And so she's been holding on to this for a long time. I just remember, I don't know what it was, but I decided that I really wanted to learn how to paint with watercolors. I'm not a good painter at all. I'm not good with pencil. Or crayons. Like, I have no artistic ability in that way. I really appreciate art. And so I was like, you know what? Like, I think this is going to be it. Watercolors are kind of messy anyway, so maybe I'll, you know, like, really be able to sneak in there. And so, you know, most of you guys would probably do the same thing and sign up for, like, maybe a class or get some sort of, you know, small little, like, test thing. Not me, though. I bought a full set of watercolors and brushes and an easel. And do you guys want to see what I did with my watercolor? There is nothing to show for it. I'm not exaggerating in saying that I literally never painted one thing with that watercolor set. But I was so convinced. I was like, this is it, babe. This is going to be my, like, my release. I'm going to, you know, like, get my creative outlet here. Never once. And that's not the first time that's happened. It's not the last time that that happened. I mean, there's just been a lot of experiences. During COVID, I mean, we all made some silly COVID purchases. We can all own up to that a little bit. But I remember there was this, I don't know what it was. I think it was because we were all cooking, because we had to. All of you guys turned into, like, master bread makers, and people bought chickens and had farm fresh eggs. I mean, we were all doing all kinds of crazy things. And I decided, you know what? My wife loves fresh squeezed orange juice, so I'm going to get a commercial grade hand press juicer. And I found one. It was a pretty good price, and you know, but it's meant for a kitchen, a restaurant kitchen, not an apartment kitchen. And so we did. I said, you know, anytime you want orange juice, I will fresh squeeze these oranges, and we used it a whole lot for like month and a half. And now we've got this sculpture that just sits on our countertop in our very small apartment kitchen of, you know, we all have these different types of things. We all have these tendencies. Some of you guys I know are savers, not spenders, and so it's not as common for some of you guys. But for others of us, we have these things. We see something. We want something. We need to have it. We barely used it, and now we're kind of over it. And we all have these experiences, and it's easier than ever to buy these things. I get influenced all the time from Instagram. I got all kinds of Instagram ads, and I'm like, oh, that's really funny. Literally, it happened yesterday morning. It was a lazy Saturday morning. I was in bed, saw this shirt that made me think of one of my friends, and it was hilarious. And with one hand holding my phone, I was able to make this purchase. I just like double-clicked it, and then it just scanned my face and took the money straight from my account. It's so convenient to spend money, you guys. It's never been easier. And we have this thing where it's like, you know what? I feel like I need something. I feel like I need this. I need to have this in order to. I need my afternoon coffee break, or I need the newest model of the iPhone, or I need whatever it is. We're able to convince ourselves these things, and a lot of times we're actually really problematically confusing the definition of need with want. And what I want to say as clearly as possible, and I'll probably say it again a couple other times, it is not bad to want things. And it is not bad to have nice things or to have new things. That's not actually a problem at all. But what I want us to do is just to reassess or maybe shift the relationship we have with those two words, need and want, and also define how am I choosing what it is that I need and what it is that I want. Because if we don't actually put any thought into it, we just kind of are taken on a ride by our desires. Some of us maybe by our habits or our addictions. Sometimes we spend money because we are not feeling great about ourselves or we're not in a healthy place. And so we have to be really intentional about this. We don't need all of these things. We want it. And sometimes we feel like we deserve it. I deserve a little treat. I've worked for 45 minutes straight. I'm ready to go, you know, buy a snack somewhere or whatever. You know, we convince ourselves. And again, it's not a bad thing, but it's important. We all do this. It's just important to recognize that we all do this. How do we determine between our wants and our desires? How do we tell the difference between something that you deserve and something that you desire? Because as I have mentioned before, what is the one thing that people in Orange County don't have? Enough. We do not have enough. We can look around. You can look around this room. You can walk to your car in the parking lot after service. You can come up with a lot of reasons of why you need more. We can look around and see what people have or what people are moving towards or where people live or what people are wearing. And there's always this ability. And when I was growing up, there was kind of this phrase, and I don't really hear it very much anymore, but this keeping up with the Joneses idea of how do I make sure that, you know, if they've got that, then I should probably be able to have that. I deserve that if they have it. They're not even nice people, and I'm way nicer than they are. I'm not judgy or anything. And so if they get it, then clearly. But we have this thing that kind of just drives us, this engine inside that we have a desire to keep up with what other people have. And when you are convinced that the things that you want are actually things that you need, then having more will never feel like enough. When we're convinced that the things that we want are actually things that we need, we allow ourselves to buy them or chase after them or pursue them or whatever it is. But they aren't actually needs, they're just desires. And so when we get more, it doesn't actually take care of that need, it just feeds our desires. And so we just kind of continue on this cycle of I need this thing, but I think I want this thing. I think I deserve this thing, so let me get it. But it's actually not checking any boxes for me. And so then there's just this search for the next thing. We're unaware of what we have, what we need, and what we want. We had a friend in town this past week, and she's one of our good friends. We met her when we lived in Iowa, and so she still lives there. She came out. She was visiting, And like you do with an old friend, we were just talking about other people that we know, people that I don't see as much. And so she was kind of giving me updates. And And there's this other family that we know, and this guy, he's in a little bit of a different stage of life. He's about 60 years old. He's retired twice now. He is very successful and just continues to live what I would consider to be my best life. But he, they still have their house in Iowa, and then they also bought a adorable little chalet in Colorado, this massive property, and they don't want to drive back and forth because it's a long drive. I know none of you guys know the difference between Iowa and Colorado, how far that is, but it's a long drive, so he's always wanted to get his pilot's license. So a few years ago, he was able to get his pilot's license, and so then obviously, you know, you got to have something to fly, so he bought a plane, and so they have a plane that he flies his family back and forth from Colorado to Iowa, and it's not a bad thing. I'm not making any judgments about it, but here's the point of the story. So my friend was visiting them, and he was like, hey, I want to take you out on the plane. And so they're driving to the airport there locally, and he's driving past all of these hangars on his way to his hangar with his plane in it. And he's pointing out to my friend, he's like, this guy is loaded. He's got three planes in this hangar. And then he would get to the next one, he's like, this guy's plane is like twice as powerful as the one. I mean, this guy is, he's got so much money, he has no idea what to do with it. And he's having all of these conversations as he's on his way to his airplane hangar with his airplane in. And here's the point of that story for me and why I'm sharing that. It's not a judgment on him. It's just that nobody thinks that they're rich because there's always someone that has more. What is it that makes you rich? What's the line that makes it that you have now achieved wealth? You know, what's the mile marker that you walk past and you are like, you know what? I've made it. I'm now rich. The reality is that nobody really has that. We don't spend enough time being intentional and thinking about what is it that I am actually pursuing in my pursuit of stuff or finances or money. For a lot of us, we can articulate some general thing. Well, I want to be secure. I want to be able to retire. I want to have a house or whatever it might be. There's an author and speaker named Ramit Sethi, and he's written some books and has a podcast, and he talks a lot to people about finances, high net worth people, as well as people that are struggling and working to get out of debt. And he talks a lot about this because he's identified that there are these invisible scripts that we all have in how we relate to money. And it's not just a poor person versus rich person thing. It's just a human thing. And he said that as he works with these people who are multi-millionaires, he said more often than not, when I ask them, when did they know they were rich, they don't think that that moment has happened yet. They're still waiting for it. Or maybe they have an ability to kind of acknowledge, like, yeah, I've got way more than most, but, you know, I never really thought about it. And he talks to people that are struggling financially, and he says, what would it mean for you to be rich? And the answer is just like, well, when I have more, or when I have as much as they do. And so a lot of what he talks about, which has actually been really, really helpful and impactful for my family, for my wife and I, as we talk about this, is he actually challenges people to think about, what is your rich life? Because for a lot of us, we think about it in a quantity of money, and there's never necessarily even like a specific number, unless you're playing the lottery. But there's not really a practical application of what that looks like. And he says, your rich life, you can have a rich life, you can feel wealthy, even if you don't have very much. Because what we're looking for is a sense of, what are the freedoms that I have? What are the abilities that I have to be able to do? How can I spend my time? How can I spend my resources? He gives a few different examples. He says, for some people's rich life, it would be the opportunity to buy a $1,000 cashmere sweater. For some people's rich life, it's the ability to buy a round of drinks for your friends. For some people's rich life, it was never having to question whether you have enough to buy an appetizer. For some people, it's traveling for 8 weeks out of the year. Some people's rich life is the ability to pick your kids up every day from school. When we start to think about what is it that allows me to feel a sense of enough, of flexibility, of having the opportunity to do the things that I want to do, it's different, each person in this room. And if you're married, it's probably different for you than it is for your spouse. There's an interesting process for us to consider, man, I want to have a lot of money, but I also don't know like what exactly that is going to help me feel. And I think if we begin to articulate some of those things, what are the mile markers in our lives, it'll change a little bit of our perspective. When you ask the world around, our culture at large, how much is enough, the answer is usually just a little bit more. And that's what keeps us moving, keeps us consuming, keeps us on this treadmill. And if we don't predetermine kind of what this looks like, what this conversation looks like in our lives, and we will just always be running and chasing after it. We need limits. We all need limits, but which ones do we need, and how do we determine what those are? So there's a lot in the scripture that talks about money, talks about generosity, it talks about finances and savings. There's a lot of different conversations here, but one passage is written by Paul in the book of 1 Timothy. He said this in 1 Timothy chapter 6. He says, if you have enough food and clothing, let us be content, which is why we require people to come dressed and we serve donut holes, because now you all get to be content. So, I mean, it's a pretty basic line. It's a pretty basic idea. If you have enough food and clothing, and really if you wanted to distill this down and put some other words to it, if you have the basic necessities covered, you should be content. Now, it's easy to nod at that, and it's easy to agree with that. It's like, yeah, I think that I am. But he goes on from there, and he articulates a little bit more. He says, but people who long to be rich, and maybe it's just long to have what they have, long to have as much as my coworker has, can be a little bit flexible with this idea of rich. People who long to be rich fall into temptation and are trapped by many foolish and harmful desires that plunge them into ruin and destruction. Lighten up, Paul. He goes on. He says, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Money is not evil. The love of money, the obsession with, the desire for accumulating more and more money, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And some people craving money have wandered from the true faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows. He says, people who long to be rich are trapped and often plunge themselves into ruin and destruction, pierced themselves with many sorrows. You ever been there? You ever felt trapped because of your financial decisions? I wanna move, but I've got this credit card debt, or I wanna have this experience or go on this trip, and I'm still trying to pay off these loans, or I've just, you know, I've spent so much Monday through Friday that I'm actually not able to go spend time with my friends on Saturday. There's this reality for us that we have to acknowledge that oftentimes our priorities are not clearly stated. We don't live by them. We don't know how to say no to ourselves, and it can lead us to some pretty dark places. In the book of Proverbs, chapter 25, it says, a person without self-control is like a city with broken down walls. Now, if you've been here over the last few weeks, you'll remember that all of January, we looked at the story of Nehemiah. And the entire story of Nehemiah is about this guy wanting to rebuild the walls of a city that he loved. He wanted to rebuild the walls because it was embarrassing that they were torn down. He wanted to rebuild the walls because they were prone to being attacked or raided or looted or taken advantage of. He wanted to rebuild the walls because there was a sense of safety that came with the walls. And this wisdom writer in Proverbs is saying a person without self-control is just like that city. It's just like a city with no walls, meaning that you are prone to being taken advantage of. You are prone to being unsafe, insecure. There's all kinds of challenges that come with this. We've all found ourselves in a situation where lack of self-control led us to poor choices. This wasn't my first, but I do remember being 18 years old, and on my way to go camping with some friends. And we had to stop by Target on our way there, which is dangerous regardless of how old you are. And when we were checking out at the Target, they said, hey, if you sign up for this credit card, you'll get 10% off of your order today. I was like, well, I'd be foolish not to. And I had that card maxed out before I knew it. And then it was another one. And then it was another one. And the reality is, A, my frontal lobe hadn't even finished fully forming yet. But B, I just had no self-control. And self-control has always been an issue for me. It's an issue for most humans, but it's always been a challenge for me, especially. And so there's this piece of what does that look like for me to not have self-control and then for my life to then start to be at risk of being hurt, getting myself into issues of struggles, of wrestling with credit cards at, you know, such a young age. Nobody at 18 or 19 or 20 should be stressed out about a credit card. We have to recognize lack of self-control causes us to be taken advantage of, and a lack of planning does damage as well. Jesus talked about it this way. He said, for who would begin construction of a building without first calculating the cost to see if there's enough money to finish it? Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of money, and then everyone would laugh at you, which I feel like is an underquoted verse of Jesus's. You want everyone to laugh at you? I mean, that's peak Jesus Christ. It's interesting because it's like kind of an obvious common sense illustration. He's not actually talking about finances. He's using a financial illustration. In this passage, he was actually talking about what does it mean to follow me, to become a Jesus follower. You should take into consideration because you're going to have to change some things about your life. But the common sense illustration that he uses is about this financial situation. And it was common sense and seemed ridiculous at the time, but it doesn't feel like it's all that common sense anymore. Who would begin construction of a building without first calculating the cost to see if there's enough money to finish? Well, I would like to introduce you to a building called Oceanwide Plaza. Do we have that picture? I don't know if you guys have seen this on your Instagram feeds or Facebook feeds over the last couple weeks. This building's called Oceanwide Plaza. It's a 27-story luxury condo building that was going to cost $1 billion, and it stalled out because they ran out of money in 2019. And so it's just been sitting there empty. I don't know if you can see that tiny building below it. That's Crypto.com Arena. And why this is all in the news recently is because they just had the Grammy Awards there. And all of these artists in LA, graffiti artists and street artists, they decided, hey, if the city's not going to make good on this plan, we'll use the space. So now, obviously, there's all kinds of people up in arms. But, I mean, it's not an insane thing what Jesus said 2,000 years ago. It literally happened right here in our backyard. And the conversation for us is to also consider, hey, are we actually being intentional? Are we counting the cost? Are we paying attention to what we're investing ourselves in? And I'm not just talking about just a financial investment, but the reality of what is it that I'm pouring myself into? What is it that I want to see be healthy and to grow? If it's a relationship, do I have the capacity to pour into that? Or am I actually diverting my energy and my time into my career at such a level that my relationship is struggling? If it's our finances, are we being intentional about how we're shaping and creating a conversation around this? Part of the point that Jesus is making is that we often feel the need to get or to do something now. Often it's because we want to look a certain way in front of other people, but because we can't always afford it, not only do we oftentimes not quite look that way, but according to Jesus, they also laugh at us for trying. it's a losing game. The spinning wheel to try and keep up with the people around us. So in the Old Testament and the New Testament, including Jesus himself, continues to tell us we need to make a plan for our money. And then we need to live by it. And ultimately, the big idea for today is making a plan for our money is how we pick and prioritize our life. It's how we pick our priorities and how we practice patience in the things that we want, the desires, the wants, not the needs. But it's a way to say, hey, here's a value system that I have. And there's like a really filthy word that I don't like to use, and that word is budget. And that's really what this conversation is about. And some of you are in this room, and you guys are like PhD-level budgeters, and that's great. I'm excited for you. Some of you are in this room, and you shudder at the thought of a budget. I have been really amazed as I continue to have conversations with different people, and whether it's in premarital counseling with couples or whether it's in just other conversations, and it feels like less and less people understand the value of a budget or use a budget. And I'm not saying that I get this right all the time, as you can talk to my wife afterwards and she'll let you know. But there's so many people that I talk with, young people even, that are doing well financially. And I ask them, you know, in those conversations, do you guys have a budget? I'm like, no. We just kind of make sure we have enough to pay our bills, which is great. I mean, what a gift to not have to open that Excel sheet. But also, is there intentionality with what it is that you're doing, with what you're spending, what you're saving, how you're giving, how you're sharing? What does it look like for us to be intentional? You know, when you think about a budget, most of us just imagine the Excel sheet, the information that we're putting in. But I kind of wanted to give a little bit of an idea of how we create a budget and maybe just some different words than you would normally think of. And so this is kind of the idea that I want us to think through a bit. Deciding, you create a budget by deciding what your values are. I don't know that almost any of us would assume that our budget has to do with our values. Our budget just has to do with having enough money to pay the bills. But actually, a budget is one of the primary ways that you, for yourself, or you with your family, will decide and define what are our values. What are our priorities? What are the things that we care a lot about? And what are the things that we don't think are that important in our lives? A budget helps us define our values. Second thing is, a budget helps us differentiate between our wants and our needs. And as we already discovered, we are not always good at doing that ourselves. Sometimes it's helpful to have a tool to say, hey, this is something that I think that we really need. It's like, okay, here's the sheet. Okay, maybe it's something that I just want, and we can wait a couple months or a couple of years or whatever. The third thing is that a budget helps us determine what our limits are going to be in each area of life. Rather than spending it if we've got it, and maybe even a little bit extra that we don't have, it says, no, here's about how much I'm going to spend in these different categories. That might be the most obvious aspect of a budget, but I think it's really crucial for us to recognize that this isn't just about eliminating or restricting fun, or eliminating or restricting freedom. It's actually about helping us say, hey, here's what is most important. And here's how I help myself and my family experience health in a different way. We, as individuals, need limits. We need limits. We think we want total freedom, but the reality is that we thrive within boundaries. The same is true with our kids. We see it more easily with our kids. Like, well, of course you need a limit, but I'm over 18. I shouldn't have any limits. I shouldn't have any boundaries. But God has designed us to live his way. And his way has boundaries. Not because he wants to limit our freedom, but because he wants us to experience wholeness and fullness of life, flourishing life. And the best way that we can do that is by staying within the boundaries, or by saying, I'm going to follow the path that Jesus modeled for me. There ought to be values-based reasons behind what you will and what you won't do, how much you will and how much you won't spend, and why. And knowing this for yourself makes it easier to explain it to other people, including your kids, as you have a conversation with your kids. I grew up with a pretty clear awareness as a kid that we were broke. We didn't have anything. We had a lot, but it was hard fought. Parents worked multiple jobs, and money was really tight a lot of the time. So I grew up with a pretty clear understanding of that. And so when I had kids, I kind of started to have this weird reaction when they would ask for something. And my natural reaction was to say, we don't have money for that. Which is maybe true, maybe not true. It's more accurate probably to say something along the lines of, that's not how we're going to spend our money. That's not what we're going to put our money towards. Instead of saying, I can't afford that, we can recognize the truth, which is, I'm choosing not to spend my money on that right now. Or I've prioritized something else instead. Or I have a bigger value at the moment. And the reality is that we all do this, but in reverse. When we spend our money without paying attention to it, or telling it where it should go, or making sure it's going to where our highest values are, and we're unable to do other things, what we can recognize is, those are my values. Even though I want to do this, or I feel like I should do this, or I want to act in this way, my values have already defined that I can't do this. It's important for us to recognize that our money is going to the things that we most value. And when we refuse to make these trade-offs, we end up feeling like our walls, or the walls of our lives, are broken down. And so in this book, The Opposite of Spoiled, they talk about something that has actually been an idea for a long time, and I'll close up with this. It's something they encourage parents to do with kids. It's something that I did as a kid, and it's something that honestly would be beneficial for a lot of adults to think this way also. And they call it the three-jar system. Has anybody ever heard of the three-jar system? Give, save, and spend. And there's a lot of different ways you can kind of divvy up your money in this. Glass jars and stage lights don't work really well, so I've got the three coffee cup system here for you. Give, save, I think that's what that says, and spend. Oh, it's like I'm playing gambling games up here with you guys, three card Monty. Give, save, and spend. And so it breaks down the money that you have, and as you talk about this in the light of kids, it's helping them understand, hey, you have a certain amount of funds, you have a certain amount of dollars, and so how do we as a family, what's our value system? And so a lot of financial experts, both Christian and non-Christian, because everyone recognizes the benefit that comes from generosity and giving, there's kind of a commonly understood breakdown of you give 10, that's what I do with my savings account all the time. You give 10%, you save 10%, and you spend the other 80, or you live off of the other 80. Now, again, some of you guys are like, okay, this is not a very sophisticated financial plan. And that's great. If you believe that, you probably have a sophisticated financial plan. But if you don't, or if maybe you're recognizing, well, I don't know that I actually have one of these categories, or maybe I'm not prioritizing one of these categories, there's a way for us to acknowledge and to recognize that this is a way to live. And over again, financially, people have proven that if you actually did live this way, that you would be able to have a healthy life financially. If you actually kept this type of budget and stuck to it, that you would be able to thrive in your life. Now, as we think about this in regards to kids, what it's doing is it's helping them understand a little bit of what we talked about last week, that not everything that comes to me is for me, or is for me to spend right now on whatever it is that I want. And it's difficult as a parent because our kids oftentimes are just beautiful, spotless mirrors of our own stuff. And so for me, as I talk with my older son, who loves to spend money as soon as possible, just last week he ended up with, he saw his grandma, so he got $20. So that's what you get for seeing grandma. As we were on our way home, he said, "Can we stop by Target? I've been saving for a Lego set." "You've been saving?" He's like, "Yeah, I got this $20. Like, "Bro, you've been at church all morning. Like, you haven't been saving anything." But there's this piece where as I look at him and I'm like, dude, you cannot just spend money as soon as you get it. And I feel my wife's laser eyes staring at me from the other side, wanting to say the same thing to me, because as simple as these things are, it does not mean that we are all good at them. It does not mean that they come naturally to us. It does not mean that we have a healthy relationship and understanding and clearly defined value system for what is it that we're doing with what we have earned. The first reason that we give is because as a Jesus follower, giving and generosity is one of our top priorities. We believe that God is a generous God, and we believe that we are most fully alive when we live open-handed with what he has entrusted us with. And it looks a lot of different ways. I'm not just talking about tithing. In the New Testament, they actually talk about generosity in like this crazy extreme of tithing. Whereas in the Old Testament, tithing would be 10%. In the New Testament, over and over again, you hear them talk about how you should give everything that you have. And so it's this lifestyle of saying, I have enough to be able to help, to be able to give, to be able to care. It's an important piece for us to understand. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul writes that God is the one who provides seed for the farmer and then bread to eat. In the same way, he'll provide and increase your resources and then produce a great harvest of generosity in you. Yes, you will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. Essentially saying that God is the one that gives you the ability to earn, and he will provide for your needs. In fact, he'll give you enough that you can care for other people also. And then the verse 11, he says, you'll be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And if you're anything like me, we often live our lives being like, man, if I was rich, I would be so generous. What I think God wants us to know is that generosity has zero to do with the amount of dollars or the amount of zeros, and everything to do with our intentionality of living open-handed, experiencing that generosity in whatever the quantity looks like, or the time, or the space, or the energy that we are being generous with. The second cup is the save cup. This just means setting money aside for the future. There's a lot of different reasons to save and a lot of different types of saving. Planning for retirement, an emergency fund, saving for your kids' college, saving up for new furniture. In our apartment, we have furniture that we have agreed this is going to be our furniture until the kids move out or stop spilling chocolate milk on the sofa, whichever one comes first. And there is a sense of like, yeah, in the future, we're going to do this other thing, or we're going to get this other thing, or whatever it might be. But there is this reality of how do we save and plan and prepare for that. And that's why we say that budget helps us practice patience. It teaches us to have long-term goals and to slowly chip away at them, as opposed to becoming impulsive. And the third one is to spend. This is the category that you get to use as soon as you get it. It's not always on fun stuff. As grown-ups, there's a lot of bills, rent, mortgage, electric bill, groceries, these types of things. All the appetizers that you bought for the football game today. All that stuff, that shouldn't be coming out of your give category, you guys. So there's a lot of just like really practical stuff that comes out of that. But then there's also stuff that is stuff that you want, but it's beneficial. Maybe a gym membership or date nights or a vacation or whatever it is. And then there's other, Netflix subscriptions. There's a lot that can come out of this, and there's a lot that should come out of this. And we should feel totally happy that we can pay for those things. There is no guilt. There is no sense of resentment or angst or any sort of negative feeling when you are using the money that you've been entrusted in an intentional way based on your values. That's the key. It's planned and intentional. We are called to be generous and wise, but it's so important for us to remember that the way that each of us lives that out is so different than the other. The values that I have for my family and our priorities are different than other people's, and that's okay. And yours are different from mine. That's not okay. They should be just like mine. Just kidding. No, we all have different values and priorities. None of us should be using our money exactly the same way. None of us should be driving exactly the same car or living in exactly the same type of home. We are all choosing, whether we realize it or not, what our priorities and our values are. So the invitation is, let's realize it. Let's do it on purpose. Let's be intentional. Say, hey, here's the vision that I want to create for my family. And unfortunately, it might require me to open up Microsoft Excel. It might require me to start tracking my spending, my expenses. It might require me to start paying attention. So my challenge for you guys and my challenge for me and my family is to commit to a 3-jar budget for the next 90 days and to involve our kids in this journey. And my kids don't know that they're going on this journey yet. But it's going to be an interesting conversation. It's going to be an important conversation. And it's different, like I said, it's different for kids. I don't know that our kids necessarily need to spend 80. Maybe they can save a little bit more. But there's a conversation very visually for kids. For us as adults, you know, when you get paid, it's probably not all in cash, and you probably don't want to put all of it in jars in your house. But we can set these accounts up. We can be intentional about this. We can be aware of what this looks like. A practical thing that we talked about a little bit last week, and we're going to invite our entire church to be a part of over these next few weeks, is on your seats, you'll see a 90-day giving challenge. This is just one practical way that you can participate in this give, save, spend category. Maybe you don't have a planned way of how you want to give, right? So this is an opportunity for each person to say, no, I want to commit to doing this for 90 days. I'm going to commit to give, save, and spend, and here's the ways that I'm going to do that. Another practical tool that we are offering is a class called Freed Up. This is the first time that we've offered this class. It's kind of a beta group, and it's going to start on Monday, February 26th. Here's the best part about this class is that you don't have to go to it. Yeah, that's exactly right. You're welcome. It's actually app-based. It's got video teaching and workbooks that you work through on your own. So we will have a discussion group that'll all just be virtual. But really, the class itself is for you to go through on your own at your own time. You can do it at midnight or 7 a.m. or whenever you want to do it. And it's not just about helping people who are struggling or bad at money or trying to get out of debt. It's actually for anyone. And so the first week of the class, it actually will help you identify what category you would put yourself in. They talk about people that are drowning financially, people who are treading water, and people who are swimming. And so kind of depending on what your financial status is currently, this will give you the resources to do that. And I told the first service, I don't know if there's still any spots left, but the first 5 people that register for this will get to do it for free. And we've got 5 free codes for it. So this works for singles as well as couples. So it's just a couple practical ways for us to do this. But what would it look like for us to commit for the next 90 days of saying, no, I'm going to live on my value system when it comes to my finances, what I own? This has nothing to do with you're not allowed to spend, you can't go, you shouldn't buy. This has to do with saying, hey, I'm going to be on purpose. I'm going to spend on purpose. I'm going to enjoy on purpose. I'm going to splurge on purpose. This is an invitation for us to live fully and intentionally when it comes to our finances. Let's pray together.
Well, regardless of where you may be at in your faith journey, I believe that everyone has a next step that they can take. If you'd like more information about what it means to put your trust in Jesus, information about getting baptized, or maybe even attending a Discover class to grow more in your faith, you can visit us online at southhills.org/Costa Mesa, and then scroll down to the Next Steps section. If you'd like more information about tithing or supporting South Hills financially, you can visit southhills.org/giving. Thanks again for listening today, and I hope that I get to see you soon.